George, sorry to keep you waiting.
I think as George and I talked about this, where we went wrong 1969 was that we were flanked by Treasury staff.
That's right.
And maybe Charlie Marlock, I'm not sure. But you just have to watch these guys like a hawk. This is like when there's a bitch in heat when that Ways and Means Committee starts in on the tax reform. And every guy's got his own thing. Yeah. You know.
In fact, I want you to take, in every one of these instances, the position, the hard position. The president opposes the change in state taxes. The president opposes the change in state taxes. That's the line you say there's a presidential decision. Well, what can we do about it? So forth. Well, that's up to the committee to discuss it and so forth. But that's our position. We oppose it for various reasons. You could argue vigorously for that. Now, I'm simply telling you, the bill comes down here with that stuff in it. We'll sign it. But don't get the position where we go up there and give those guys, your treasury guys, the guys that say, look, so we'll go back in the dark corners around there and have a couple of scotches and say, all right, well, we'll make a deal. That's what I'm going to be saying.
Right. Well, I will see to it that in these executive sessions, either Bill Simon or I are there. And we'll have our technical people there, but we won't leave them as the managers of that discussion. On the simplification business, I think the Lee Henkel and company have worked out a really interesting thing, starting with the tax form and making it simple and then seeing what legislative changes need to be made in order to carry that out. They really went about it in the first way. And Lee's a very good presenter, and I'm going to have him come to the Ways and Means Committee and present it. He's very effective, and it'll help him to do that. There are a couple of things connected with the simplification proposal that I thought I wanted you to be just alert to in case they hadn't been drawn to your attention. One is that in the so-called miscellaneous deduction that we need to have, that in which you bundle up certain things and give a deduction, we include the elimination of the dividend exclusion. That is one of the items that is now in the law, which gets eliminated and included, in effect, in this miscellaneous deduction. And we're in favor of that. It simplifies matters and people. It's equitable and so forth. The New York Stock Exchange will scream bloody murder because they think this little deduction helps stimulate purchases of stock by small investors, and they're suffering badly, so we'll hear from them quite adversely on this aspect of the proposal. And I just wanted to be sure you were aware of that.
We're doing a thing for the New York Stock Exchange, screaming about a lot of things, but I need to be aware of that. How much is it really worth?
Well, you're doing this with all kinds of these odds and ends of special favorite deduction,
a lot of other things in it. Oh,
yes,
a lot of
all sorts of stuff.
All right, good.
And it would stick out like a sore thumb.
All right, fine. Okay, we'll do it. We'll do it.
Okay. The other item that is might cost us a fair amount of money, like $300-500 million, has to do with the retirement income credit. As the situation is now, there is a $1,500 retirement income credit, and a person must deduct from that credit any earnings and also Social Security payments. The idea of it was to put people who don't receive Social Security payments, like firemen, policemen, federal government employees who are retired, in the same tax position, more or less, as somebody who does receive Social Security, because Social Security is tax-free. Now, the proposal is to eliminate the earnings deduction so that you take your $1,500, you deduct your Social Security from it, and that's it. You don't deduct your earnings. And to change the eligibility so that instead of just declaring you're retired, you just have an age. Age 65 is what we propose. It'll probably come down to 62, but you define eligibility for this $1,500 simply by age, and anybody over 65 gets it. The reason why this may cost us a fair amount is that there is a real prospect prospect that the $1,500 amount will be increased because Social Security has increased, you see, and they want to increase the $1,500, and some are proposing it go as high as $3,000 or so. And the higher it goes, the more this costs. Now, there are a lot of permutations and ways of bargaining and working on this.
I'm talking because of the presentation that I had. Very early this morning.
Well, I don't blame you for yawning. This tax subject is Well, we think that this again is a good simplification. It affects older people particularly. It will cost us something. We can't be sure exactly how much because of this wild card off to the side, and we think it's worth doing, but we just want you to realize that the cost could be more substantial than the proposal as such. But we think in many ways the most interesting thing in our whole tax package is this business of making the form simple. That will affect a lot of people, and we should go all out to try to make that good.
Is that right that we can't cost more than $500 million?
The maximum we think it could cost is $800 million just from this proposal.
Would that be then at even parity with Social Security?
They came up to about $3,000. It would $3,200 they're proposing.
And that's parity.
That's sort of parity. That gets up to the maximum under Social Security, and would mean some Social Security people would be able to claim this credit. But it stayed at $1,500 for quite a while. The biggest group who benefit from it are federal government employees.
About 1.5 million federal employees.
1.6. Well, they're not the only ones. A lot of municipal governments have their own retirement plans and are not in Social Security. But they're swinging over to Social Security. Just going back to the estate and gift and so on, our intention now in the testimony is just, again, not to say anything about it. Would you rather have us come on hard and say we're opposed to any change? Or, see, what we're now structured is, we are proposing various things, quite a few things.
And my view is to propose the things that we have solemnly agreed on. Then I can say that the estate and gift, that these are matters that we know the committee is very interested in. We have a very diverse opinions that have been submitted, and we do not believe that we are not prepared at this time to advocate any position.
Okay, and say that explicitly.
Say that explicitly. How's it down to you, John? Mark, say, as George suggests, he's paying the Congress. We welcome here the participation, the consultation with the Congress so forth, but that the administration has not reached it. We do not have a position. We have no recommendations to make in this field. That we feel that this is a matter, however, that could and should be discussed in the appropriate committees.
What about this consolidation, George, of a state and gift? Is that so obvious and sort of generally accepted now that we ought to join in that, or is that still controversial?
Well, everything is, if that's controversial, the fact that the two things are separate enables wealthy people to give more to their children than would be the case if you combined them. But it is hard to argue that you shouldn't combine them. And intellectually, it's difficult to make that argument, just as I think it's difficult to argue that you shouldn't treat capital gains at death the same way you treat them at life, or in some manner deal with that problem. It's a hard position to maintain, although I'm quite prepared to maintain it.
The trick here is to feather this in such a way that
people have time to plan or change their estate plans.
Oh, yeah. The transition rules can be worked out that are on all of these things
that are
equitable.
From a political standpoint, that's the most important thing to us, would be the transitional aspects of all this. And to fight for a transition that gives us the least amount of heat. You'll have guys like Scape and others coming in here just knocking the walls down if all of a sudden overnight there's a change in the rules. Because those are the kind of guys that spent a lifetime constructing a lab.
Right.
That's really great.
Well, I would say that the, as among the different things that one talks about here, that unification of the state and gift tax rates is something that people think ought to be done pretty broadly. The liberalization of the marital deduction, which we talked about, really helps the person with an estate of, say, $200,000-$300,000. It doesn't make any difference to the wealthy person. And is a way of, in effect, changing the rate schedule insofar as it affects people like that. The generation skipping transfer business, that has an era of mystique and mystery, and that's where all the tax lawyers play around and love to do. And
that's
one that we have we made a proposal to you, which you rejected. And I think that's wildly controversial, and that's a good one to stay away from.
Yep.
I agree with your call on that. The capital gains of debt, the American Bankers Association has a proposal there. There are lots of other proposals, and people on the whole would like to leave that alone, but they find it so difficult to argue that you shouldn't tax capital gains at debt that they have been looking around for formulas that.
I don't believe that. You negotiate on that?
Well, in your paper here.
That's not true. Sure are.
It says here, George, use your judgment and bargain hard across this set.
That's right on your.
Yeah, I think Mills and the committee have both had a scheme up on that,
right.
Don't they? And you can't just go in there and say, no, I suppose it's
not. That's right.
But
I would say that this is a matter, like state gift, this is a matter that we have not developed a full position on. We'd like to get the views of the committee and have a continuing discussion to see what something like that.
But the transition, it seems to me, is where the politics is.
Well, suppose we said something like that, and that we recognize sort of the key ingredients here are capital gains of death, the rates, the marital deduction, unification, and the generation skipping trust. Those are the things people talk about. But they're interrelated.
But these are matters that are transitional stages needed, and they're all matters that now need intensive study and consultation between the Congress. This is a matter that typically lends itself to this kind of approach.
So
we're going to have a meeting with bipartisan leaders on taxes, aren't we?
No, sir. You talked about that at one of the meetings, and then we sent you a note.
I see. So that's out now, huh? Okay. That meeting, it says bipartisan leadership here. 8:30, would that be first of May. We didn't want that to be.
Well, it wasn't. I think we agreed it would be for this purpose.
Oh, was there not?
I don't know what they're working on.
Yes. Just be sure that I want to check that it is for this purpose to go see if it is for this. You don't want a tax meeting. I can see from the basis of this, good God, we get to all that tax meeting.
Well, Mills is very. See, his strategy is.
It says a bipartisan leadership meeting. Is that supposed to be on taxes? Is that what you had in mind?
Yes, sir.
The first
one. I'm sorry, that was 4:00.
Right, across his house. Good. Yeah, leave it.
it on. I was afraid we had enough time to share it if you're off your signal on that.
Well, Mills has us at the end of his tax hearing, and we'll wind up either in 1 or 2 days. Then we move on to trade, and we won't come back to taxes until the fall sometime, when he'll go into executive session. What he seems to think is going to happen is that we'll wind up with some kind of a bill out of Ways and Means and an open or partially open rule. And then it's going to be mayhem in the House. And he doesn't have much hope that there'll be a reasonable tax bill. And he thinks that what may happen is a bill that you'll have to veto. That is, it'll be so bad, and he'll help you sustain the veto. But he doesn't, in other words, he isn't very optimistic that we're going to get
our property tax relief and our relief for parochial aid to schools.
But anyway, he's afraid. But from our standpoint, it seems to me, we want to stake out some high ground of things that we're for,
right,
like the things you mentioned.
Sure,
that's our program.
Very, very high.
Oh, yeah. There's
the politics, simplification, it's not the energy to help a lot of people. But in terms of the politics generally, just remember to keep that old folks reduction and that parochial aid to schools, and make the point that this must be a responsible tax bill. And if it's made a Christmas tree, and they load too many ornaments on the tree, the whole tree will break down. I think you could even use that advice and say, now look, this has got to be a tax bill that should zero in on some specific things that are needed to be done. Your minimum deduction is incidental to the politics. That kind of minimum tax.
Mm-hmm.
That's good politics. But my point is, say, now beyond that, if this becomes now a Christmas tree with too many ornaments on it, it'll break the tree down. Several downsides to it.
the fact that we use this as a device in our negotiations with other countries to develop a tax treaty with them that has its effect on how our citizens are treated abroad. It has a problem in it that if we force a U.S. citizen to pay a tax on a dividend, and we don't force a foreign citizen of another country to pay a tax on a dividend from the same country, that it is a invites the U.S. citizen to open a numbered account in Switzerland or something and purchase his stock that way and escape the tax. And we would have to put some very tough rules in on identifying who it is that's bought this stock and so forth in order to implement it. The third thing that it has going against it is the argument that why should we give a break to a foreigner that we don't give to our own citizen? We make our citizen pay a tax, we don't make the foreigner pay a tax, what the hell? And that argument would be strongly advanced. Now, Mills has put it forward. It's something that's been debated back and forth over the years. Some of these points can be met, and on the last one you just say, well, if you want investment, this is one way to get it. Our group that discusses these things is sort of divided on, although nobody feels terribly strongly. As something with Mills, if he wants to push it, my inclination would be to say, well, Mr. Chairman, if you feel that this is that good, we'll go along with you. It's your proposal.
Right.
We're not making the recommendation.
This is one that is too damn complicated for most people to understand. But let the monkey be on Mills' back. He takes the leadership. We will not oppose it.
Okay. Now, finally, on the tax area, we now believe that in fiscal 73, our receipts will be on the order of $6 billion more than was estimated when the budget went up. And in fiscal 74, probably something similar. Now, in terms of the yield of our tax system and in terms of the budget deficit and inflation and so on, that's an important fact. It is widely known in the market that that's so. We just had a big refinancing we announced yesterday. We met with the usual run of bankers and securities people, and we do. And they all have their estimates, and they all think on the whole that our budget picture is even better than that. But it is not a secret or anything. People know it. And we need at least to put forward our re-estimates of receipts sometime soon. We don't need to re-estimate our outlays, but we need to put the receipt
right
forward. And there are two options, it seems to me. One is that I can just put it out in the course of this testimony and on Monday. So it's an item that our receipts are higher and argue the budget case and so on. Or as part of any statement you make on Phase 3 and the Economic Stabilization Act and so forth, that's an item that you could mention in there. But this is something that we ought to announce pretty soon, and we could do it either way. Do you have any thoughts on that? Signing the bill, and then you'd want to make some eloquent statement as you signed the bill about our efforts against inflation and so on. Or two, you might be in the position of not having any economic stabilization program, and either then you would rail up the Congress to get going and pass it, or say, well, all right, if they don't want to, we think they've made a mistake, and we had a program that was forceful and so on, but since they've decided not to do it, we're going to, however, continue the fight against inflation on a voluntary basis, and we'll try to, we expect business to cooperate, labor to cooperate, we'll keep these various committees on food and so forth that we have, and I want to again emphasize the importance of the budget. Our receipts are higher and we are making progress against the deficit. And we have a list of things that could be said under those circumstances. So that is a context in which saying something about the receipts is, it's an item. It's not news in the sense that sophisticated people know it, but it's news that it would be officially announced.
When would you testify, George?
Monday is the day. My tax testimony is Monday.
I think basically it would probably, John, let me get your political judgment. I don't think it's enough of a. Why waste your tax testimony? Maybe it's worth just putting out as a separate story. I mean, you might as well get 2 ounces of it. Basically, 2 stories with your tax testimony if you want, and then you, Schultz, rather than me, perhaps, then you put out the next day, we have a re-estimate of a sheet of receipts, it's this and that, but we still have a deficit, we still got a hell of a problem.
Would your testimony, if it included this, have any relationship to what the Congress might do with the economic stabilization extension?
Well, probably.
More or less liable to.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
That is
too late. I don't think so. I don't think so.
I'm likely to get questions on this, I think.
What we can do is say, yes, there has been an increase in receipts, and we're now evaluating him, and I'm going to have a statement later in the week on it. That's what I'd say.
Okay.
That's why I think. I think you should run out with a separate story. You got a good it's a sort of a half good story. So it poses problems. But don't you agree, John? Crack, put it out and say, well, if receipts are up. You had some other good news, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we have some very good trade figures this month.
Trade.
Our deficit is down in this month to $50 million. It's been running on the order of $300-500 million a month.
Okay.
So we've had a big decline there, and so maybe we're getting somewhere. Although there's lots of room for skepticism about an individual month's figures, and the Council of Economic Advisers and skeptical comments.
Right.
So that's one item.
Right.
Another item that's really pretty impressive is that since your energy message, and particularly the revised oil import program. We have had announcements of 6 new refineries intended to be built in the U.S.
Isn't that great?
And we haven't had any new ones announced since 1965. So it's
really
made a difference.
Also, that's our main jobs, right, John?
Right.
And supply. And prices.
So, something good happens once in a while.
Well, lots of things better happen. Tell me this, the economy continues to bubble along about still strong. The problem being that I'm not referring to the inflation problem in terms of the new orders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm watching these figures.
Still going like a house of fire.
Right.
It's going too fast, and we need to slow it down, otherwise it gets...
What about your suggestion about the investment tax credit? Is that you going to tackle that in your tax thing?
Well, I sent in something on that. We had that meeting here, and you wanted to hear about it and so on, and I sent that in.
I sent that in, and I initialed something, but that isn't going to be interesting.
Well, what I will... Herb Stein made a statement the other day that we were considering something in the area of taxes, and it just has raise all kinds of
taxes. Well, everybody, raise the there may be a tax increase.
Yeah.
That is the headline read, John, and then I read his statement and didn't say that at all. Am I right?
Now, he was very circumspect, and what he was referring to was this,
this
proposal. So what I said yesterday was that Arthur Burns had publicly proposed that there be a variable investment tax credit.
Right.
And so naturally, when Burns makes that kind of statement, we consider it and think about it. But we have no present intention of offering anything of that kind. The Mills is dedicated against it. And the note that I got back from you was that we shouldn't propose this if other, and we might try to get some other private people to propose it, and then maybe there could be some discussion of it. So that's the line I've been on. It is unfortunate, I think, the comment that Herb made, because it has got people all busily placing orders all of a sudden this week. They know I'm going to testify on Monday.
We're in for a, call me an absolute frothing dinner.
Various ways, and we can talk about that on Saturday, what we can do on the PR side. think meeting with that labor management committee is a good idea, even though it isn't about this necessarily. That's next week, isn't it?
That's on Tuesday and Wednesday.
I think it's very good. I want to meet with them, have a good heart-to-heart talk. But when you come right down to it, George, there isn't a damn thing that will work. I think I thought it through pretty well. John has been very helpful, because he is an activist type too. But John, do you have any other view at this point? You came down on the side of
PR. PR.
Yeah, PR is very important. But everybody
managed somebody like Rudy or someone like your fellow ought to get in this and map a campaign, and there ought to be some sloganizing and some fairly aggressive merchandising of this thing.
Right. Now, the other thing that I think we have to have in mind too is that must be a presidential statement, which I would do, I think it should be a written, signed statement, however, rather than one that I get out and address the nation on. Isn't that exciting? Unfortunately. But a written, signed statement, we are, based on this, we are doing this, we are doing this, we are doing this, we are doing this. Controls are still in the force, and so forth, and they will be, and I have directed the Cost of Living Council and the Secretary of Treasury and so forth to redouble their efforts in every area to see this and that. And maybe we redouble the team, say we redouble the number of people, you know what I mean? Something, anything to indicate we're doing something more to enforce phase three. The second point is that or the Congress doesn't pass it. Now, you can, on the one hand, say, please, Congress, pass it. On the other hand, you can say that Congress is acting irresponsibly in this case, not passing something. You know what I mean? Or even passing something to veto. Well,
no,
we're going to veto whatever. They're going to have signed the Senate. But they may not pass anything. Isn't that your point?
They may get hung up between the Senate that wants rent controls and the House which doesn't want the stuff that's in the Congress report and just stalemate.
All right. Well, then we can't. We'll have to wait a little while it's stalemated. I think we should say immediately if they don't act that way that we are, that the statement should get out from the White House. All that is, this is the congressional impasse, but that all the controls remain in force, and you can say this, that if any prices rise during the period before the Congress does act, we will roll back the time now. I think we should say that.
Well, you can take that approach, or you could take the approach, well, all right, and they don't want controls, but we will put in a voluntary program.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just assuming that they don't want. I'm assuming the fact that you may have a situation where there is a clear indication that the Congress is not going to act. It may be a situation where they get an impasse and then spend 4, 5, or 6 days in conference and eventually act. See my point? And that is the place where we've got to take a line. We've got to wait for the Congress. But in any event, we are going to continue. Everything remains in force. Unless until the Congress acts. Then if the Congress doesn't act, take it off flat out. Say, this is too bad. We therefore are going forward with a stepped up system of voluntary controls. In our meeting, I've called in the major business leaders and I've called in the major labor leaders.
We have to decide to keep the Cost of Living Council. You can do that, whether they
yes.
or not.
Yes.
And we'd have to put them off on the White House payroll and various
things
of that.
That's right. In other words, whatever the Congress, if the Congress just doesn't act, then we go out and say, this is not the end. This is not the end. This is simply as far as controls are, as far as our battle against inflation is not lost because of this Congress. We now are forced to take another road, and that road can succeed too. And so, the Cost of Living Council, I've ordered it to stay in effect. We are going to continue to call in the major businesses, and so forth and so on, and urge the restraint. I don't know, John, what's your line on this?
Well, I think the great leaders are going to have to tell us what will work here, or what has a chance of working, and then combine that. Some of these appeals and so on. But I keep thinking about old Harry Truman and the rail strike.